NRP, S2E1, Happy 2013. Welcome to the Nutrats Podcast, Season 2, Episode 1. Happy 2013, everybody. Hope you had a nice holiday break and everything. You're all getting back to work because I know it's taking me a while to get back to work. Anyway, I was hoping this episode to introduce a new co-host to the show, but they're currently having some technical difficulties with their computer, so maybe we'll see them later on in a few episodes if, you know, once things resolve themselves. Anyway, today I'd like to talk about some goals for the new season of the show, what I've been up to, some of my expectations for the coming week ahead since it's Monday, and then I'm going to just round things out with some entertainment, talking about video games I've been playing, you know, doing a lot of Minecraft. So anyway, goals for the new season. I'd like to podcast regularly now, hopefully once a week. I'd like to blog more regularly, too. I like to put together little meticulous lists of things, because that's basically what I do, is I take things in, and I kind of sort them through a little filter, and I find little nuggets that are useful, and I make them into lists, and then every time I'm on a forum, someone always asks, what's this thing, and can somebody recommend 5 to 10 of these, or, you know, and it's like, okay, here's a list I put together 2 years ago, and, oh, what do you know, it's still useful and relevant. I should probably update a few of them, but, you know, that's what I do. I do that for myself, and I think if people find it useful, so I'm going to try and do more of that. Try and bring in some more traffic. You know, I'd like to do more social media stuff. I mean, I don't know, that term, because there are people that they just do social media, and oh, I'm a social media expert. Oh boy, no, guys, no, don't. That's like calling yourself an entrepreneur and a startup guru. Oh, guru, there's a term that should have ended with a love guru. Anyway, yeah, I just plan on doing more social media stuff as time goes on. I mean, I've got the blog on No Rights Productions. That's fine. You know, it's like the site itself is a hub, and then we've got the blog, which you'll find this podcast. I'll also put it out in the social media sphere, Twitterverse, whatever you want to call it. Put it on Twitter, link it on Tumblr, link it on Facebook. That's right, I actually made a Facebook page, and it's still kind of in the works, because I haven't really done much curating. I still need, like, I've got a YouTube channel that I recently cleared to post long videos on, and I haven't made artsy backgrounds and stuff. Anyway, don't worry, I'll be doing more of that as I tell you more things I've been up to and planning. Because I'm slowly shifting gears from the glacial pace of basically doing nothing that I was doing for a while, where I kept anticipating and wanting to do things and not actually doing things. And I'll talk about that too, along with my expectations for the week, things I'm going to be doing. But let's first talk about what I've been up to. Well, I got Manga Studio 5 recently. Now, I've had Manga Studio since about version 3. I'm not exactly sure when I got it. I remember I got it at an Apple store, and I got Debut 3, and I didn't really use it that much. I think at the time I'd heard about it through Meredith Grand's Octopus Pie. She'd been drawing with that and posted some videos. I think I might have had it before then, I'm not sure. But I had Debut 3, and I used that for a project or two, and then when my upgraded my operating system, it got rid of the framework that it worked in, because it's like Apple is, if you ever want to try and run older software, Apple's looking ahead, but they're also saying, what, you want to run older software? That's cute, which I guess is a good frame of mind. I mean, it's easier to work that way with Apple than say with Adobe. Yeah, Adobe, they're prices are kind of steep for programs anymore, especially when you look at that there's alternatives now. There's things like ArtRage, which is a nice alternative to Painter, which is, you know, compared to Photoshop, I think Painter's kind of close in price range, but it, you know, they've introduced Painter Lite, and then now there's programs like ArtRage and Sketchbook Pro and whatnot that are kind of eating up the $60 to $80 price range market, which is nice. You know, I mean, if you want the fuller versions, I mean, I try and just get everything I can. So I got Manga Studio, and I had Manga Studio 3. I've used it a few times, and it's like, well, if I'm going to buy this program again, because I need to, because Apple's making it impossible to run the older versions, I guess I'll just get the fullest version I can. So I got EX4. It's really nice. It was really nice for inking. Really clean lines, all kinds of tools, rulers, all this stuff. It's like, wow, this is a nice program. Then people told me about Clip Studio Paint from Japan. I've had friends that were importing it. Well, they either had the trial or they bought it from Japan, which is kind of weird in a way, because like you have to go to a site with no real English words on it, and then not only can you not, you have to buy the product with money, but they don't use like real money on the site. They have like gold credits, you know, internet fun money basically, and it's like, wow, okay. So I'd be kind of afraid to do that. And then when you get the program, you have to run a fan translation of the interface, which is what I did. I downloaded the trial of it because a friend of mine was telling me about it, and it was a fanslation of the interface, which is nice. You know, it was pretty robust, except for the fact that when a whole bunch of characters appear on a screen with a button and I can't read any of them or the button, I'm kind of terrified. And you know, it's like I had to click through like two buttons like that to open the trial, and so I used it a few times and it looked nice. And then they announced it as Manga Studio 5, which was kind of weird. I thought they'd just make it a whole different program because it's not quite the same as regular the old Manga Studio was. The old Manga Studio was mostly focused on black and white line art, but now it's like, wow, this thing really, you know, rivals Painter and Photoshop with its level of brushes, the kind of stuff it does. I mean, it's not perfect. It's got a lot of nice brushes. It's also got a lot of, well, you can customize things and tweak stuff. There's a lot of toolbars you can move and customize everything, and it's still kind of scary, but also kind of awesome. It's like, I want to do this. Can I do this? Yep, can. Just gotta find it and move this little slider, these 3D models and all this stuff. And today I just bought the Ray Frinden brushes. He's selling them for $5. How can you not like that? He's selling pencils, inks, and then some painterly brushes. How I originally found out about 5 was I was on YouTube and I saw they'd uploaded a video demoing 5. And, you know, I followed that to the site that said, okay, it's an exclusive, it kind of officially launched, and then there's going to be this big full version in the summer where they add a lot of stuff. Probably all the story and page stuff they had in the previous version that, you know, people were angry that wasn't there. And then they're like, oh wait, you can still kind of do these features? Because people did, when it first came out, people were, who have been posting YouTube videos on it, because there's been a few, they're still like, okay, I got an early, you know, early review copy, or they've just been playing with it for a week, and then they just realized, oh, the rulers and stuff are still here, you just have to go here for it now. So it is a totally different program, and it takes a little bit of learning how to do things. And it's funny, I've watched that video like two or three times before I realized, I looked on the site, they've got a manual PDF to explain where stuff is, but all the images are from the Clip Studio Paint version of the manual. So it's like, okay, you go to this menu, and then the menu is entirely in Japanese. So, and the video shows it too. In fact, if you look in the video, and they're using a Mac, and up in the upper left corner by the Apple sign, you got Clip Studio Paint. I'm like, this is, come on, guys. Just reusing their footage, which I guess, you know, they're a localization company, you know, I don't know how things are going, but like I was saying, I like it. I'm trying to get used to drawing in it and painting and whatnot. I've got, like, about a year ago, I got this Cintiq, and then I just got an arm for it recently, the Ergotron LX arm, because before, I'd gotten that stand for it was like an easel, and it's real solid, but it really only has about 3 settings. Up, down, and then kind of just move it in between those and figure out what you want. And the thing is, 19 pounds, it's kind of hefty. And you're just like, this thing is scary. I just want to sit it and use it. And it's like, you kind of prop up and it's like, I don't know how I feel about this. And now, you know, it's like, I moved it around trying to draw with it. And I tried to get used to it. And I definitely like it better than a regular tablet, because there was always, like, if you take a few days off from drawing it back, you kind of have to retrain, you know, looking at the screen and then drawing on the thing and looking at it, you know, get into the groove of it. Versus with the Cintiq, it's like, well, it's right in front of me, I can see it. It still doesn't quite have the feel of paper, and it probably never will, because it's drawing on a screen. Even if it got that texture perfectly, it's still going to be, like, you know, I've heard people describe it as, like, ice skating with the brush. It's like, I don't want to think like that when I'm making art. And that kind of leads me into another topic of, when you're making art in a studio, like Bob Ross, you know, you want to make yourself happy. You want to have everything, the rest of the world is chaotic and crazy and gives you anxiety. Anyway, in your studio, you want to have everything just where you want it. You want to have things going peaceful, happy. If stuff messes up, you don't want to sit and go, like, you know, you don't want to do an office-based situation where it's like 9 in the morning, everyone's just getting into the office, and then tone loader, what the, CPC loader, what's that? You know, you don't want to do that. When you get in the studio, you want to turn on some music, you want to just relax, and you want to create. And it's also about building up in yourself just a desire and enthusiasm to do what you do, and to let things roll off your back more smoothly. I've been trying to do that. That's why I got this arm, so I can move the Cintiq and position it a little bit better, rotate it. The best part about ordering that arm was, I decided to go with the free shipping, and it said, oh, it might take a few extra days to get there. I'm like, I'm fine with that if it saves me a few bucks. Came in 2 days. Like, I am so glad I didn't pay for shipping. I guess I wouldn't have known it if I'd paid extra for it, if I'd paid like $5 for shipping and it arrived in a few days, versus I didn't pay for shipping at all and it arrived in two. Back to making art, I've been trying to focus on drawing, getting myself better acquainted with drawing digitally, because I find I've got my own issues with making art that I've been trying to resolve, because I get in the concept of thinking about making art and building it all up in my head and not actually going and making art. So there's a lot of things that I think feed into that, and it's very easy to get yourself lost in that, and I really need to focus on making stuff during the day and being productive with my day, and also realizing that if I don't get everything done in one day, it's not going to be the end of the world. I can keep going. Because that's a problem I had with sketchbooks, where I would get a sketchbook. You know how this is. You get the new sketchbook, and it's like, ooh, it's so pristine. I'm going to fill this whole thing. And you do a drawing on the first page, because that's where you start, right? And it looks like crap. Or, oh, you kind of doodle on the edge and kind of runs over and things don't work. Okay, moving on. Do I go to the back? It would smear. Okay, I'll go to the next page. After a while, you do like two or so pages, and then the weight of the excess the empty pages in the back, I mean, sure, some people are like, this is a mountain I will climb, and there's people that have done that. There are people that go on benders to make art. And with me, it's an anxiety thing. It's taken me a while to realize that, I don't feel the sketchbook. When I was a kid, I would do the first couple of drawings, get really frustrated for some reason, flip it over and try to use the back like it was a new front, and that would kind of go, and then there'd be all these empty pages in the middle. It's an anxiety because it's a mental buildup, just like mental expectations of what you think you need to be making. You think everything needs to be precious, pristine. You make a mistake, well, get another sheet of paper and start drawing over it, fix it, whatever. And that's the nice thing about digital, is you can just keep going on top of. As long as you've got the storage space for it on your computer, the RAM, the processor power, and whatnot. You know, there's a lot of variables in there, but you can basically keep going forever with all kinds of different versions and backups and whatnot. But with paper, I was most comfortable drawing with a little clipboard and a piece of, like, copy binder paper. Because I could move it all around. There was no... It's very freeing compared to other things. Like, because I've got anxiety issues. I know this, and I'm trying to deal with it. But there's just something about all the big open space in the world, and you look at it and you're like, I'm going to do everything. Oh my gosh, I have to make everything. I have to be responsible. And it's the least anxious, you know, least anxiety-causing thing is to have one sheet of paper by itself loose, and then if you need another one, put a piece over it, light box or whatever. And I'm trying to get that flow digitally and realize that I don't have to fill up. I mean, that's another nice thing about working digital is you can change your brush size from you've got this tiny brush and you've been going at it for 15 hours, or big gigantic painterly brush, swoosh. So yeah, digitally painting, I'm still trying to learn to digitally paint better. I mean, I know how to do it. There's a lot of things where it's like, oh, I know the keyboard shortcut to this. I know the workaround for this. It's like, but I have to actually sit and do it because I've watched tutorials a lot, and I get anxious and built up mentally to create a lot, and then I don't. And this is something I'm trying to resolve within myself, and I'm trying to resolve it by being proactive and positive and trying to share my anxieties with you people, because I think other people can relate. Because when I hear somebody talk about their anxieties, like, I've listened to a few podcasts I had mentioned before in the past where people were like, yeah, I've got writer's block and I've got this and I'm trying to deal with it, man, and here's what I think is some solutions. And they just rattle off ideas about what they're dealing with and how. And that's great. Until some shows like that I've listened to, it becomes shtick. It becomes, they come in and they've got their couple of bits they do with their co-host, or, you know, and it's like, where is the content in this show? I don't know. For what I'm providing for you people, I'd like to share my own insecurities, what I'm trying to learn, when I find helpful things, I try to toss it out there, go, here's a link to this, here's a list of these things. So I try to be helpful, and I'm trying to be positive, because there's a lot of negativity on the internet. I've realized this. Like, there's been in the last 2-3 years or so, there's been a surgence of internet review sites, internet comedians that want to rip apart movies, rip apart books, rip apart whatever, get video games. And there, a lot of it is, this thing is horrible, let's point and laugh at it. And it's like, why are we celebrating good things? I understand the humor in, like, look how stupid this is, look how bad this is. I understand that. And, you know, it's hard to make comedy out of things that are positive. But maybe we should be celebrating things that are positive and good and useful and helpful, and passing them along, growing upon them. Because I remember I went to a friend's wedding one year, and I'd been in a funk, family issues, dealing with other people I knew, and having to book this trip, and I flew out, and my ear had popped on the trip, on the flight over, and it didn't really resettle till the flight back, and it was kind of weird. I realized when I got there, everyone was really positive. Everyone was really friendly. Everyone was, you know, talking about good things, you know, and talking about, oh, hey, did you go to this celebration? Hey, this thing's gonna be, oh, hey, I remember you. I mean, sure, it was a wedding, and people were happy and cheerful, and, you know, as the single guy at the party, it was kind of weird where everybody was talking about being married or getting married or some wedding they were going to. That's a whole different issue. But everybody was positive. And I was like, you know, this is something different, because, like, I'd been to college where there'd been people, and I'd been through high school, and I'd been through, you know, after graduating and all this stuff, and being a guy dealing with life. And everybody's kind of gotten snarky, everybody's kind of got a little bit isolated, and, you know, and you get around more than one person, and they start choosing sides of who they're going to be trying to show off to, and it's like, really, we don't need to be negative. I mean, it's all right to make a ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba kind of joke and just say, hey, I'm just trying to get a rise out of everybody for either my own amusement or for you too, guys. You know, I want to be positive. And I think in today's society, I don't want to be in today's world, but, you know, I want to say that today it's kind of hard to be positive. And I think we should try and embrace it, and I'm trying to find the things that I enjoy and try to show you why I enjoy them and what I'm getting out of them, and hopefully we can try and start a dialogue. That's why I want to make better use of things like Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, because it's weird that there's these social media things, and yet, you know, there are times I feel more alone now than I did, you know, before social media. I mean, granted, you know, Facebook. Okay, you've put me in touch with all these people that I went to high school with, college with, etc. How many times do I really have a conversation with these people? I mean, it's a bit different from Twitter in that Twitter I've befriended and followed complete strangers. But on the other aspect of it, with Facebook, you really find out that people you know, that, you know, brace yourself, the reshares are coming. It's like people sharing pictures of text of somebody's inspirational quote. It's like there's a level I'm able to accept, you know, stuff like, you want to show us a picture of your kids? That's great. That's at least you. You want to show me a picture of, you know, reason why beer is better than women? I don't. I'm probably liable to mute you or whatever. And the thing about Facebook is it's got a whole bunch of sliders. It's like, okay, I finally blocked all these people that I'm friends with, but I don't want to see their stupid shares. Not really. It's like, oh man, come on. And I know it's not just me. Mark Zuckerberg's sister shared something by accident that she shouldn't have? And it's like, well, gee, that tells you that there's all kinds of problems. I mean, not like Twitter's, you know, better per se. It's just different. You know, Twitter, I had a habit of following people that would follow me, which in like 2006 when it started, that was kind of permissible. But after a while, when the influx of people going, Twitter is awesome, I'm going to be on here, I realized when I got a direct message, Viagra spam from somebody, like, and then I don't even think it was just they got hacked or they got spammed or whatever. I think that's just who they were. I was like, why am I following people I should, you know, I don't know? And I've kind of limited it to other web cartoonists because I want to think that, you know, as web cartoonists, we can be in, like, I started webcomics in 2002, so I've been in a little subculture of it, of people that are doing things, and sometimes you see people come out of that and be bigger. I'm all for people coming in and learning. Like, I was a very horrible artist when I started, too. The thing is, I didn't jump gung-ho into joining every webcomic group, following every web cartoonist out there, and saying, okay, you got to follow me. We're all part of this big chain of web cartoonists. We all follow each other, right? We're all web cartoonists. And it's like, I've had people follow me, and I've either haven't had time to check out their thing or whatever in a day, and then they unfollow me. And it's like, if you're that kind of person that wants me to directly follow you because you follow me, and then you don't, you unfollow me, I have no interest in following you. And I wouldn't want that kind of follower. I don't want to be that kind of follower to somebody. If I'm following them, I'd kind of like to have an interest in what they're saying. I mean, yeah, I've got other things where I'm trying to follow every actor who's been in Star Trek, or at least every main cast member. But even then, that's just something stupid that I've been doing. I don't know why. I think it's like you start with Will Wheaton, right? And you start following him because he's, you know, a big internet person. He actually says some interest. He actually has some good share, you know, links to share, comments. He's actually in things. You follow Brent Spiner, LeVar Burton, Sir Patrick Stewart got on there. How could you not follow him? I mean, even if you're not into just following famous people, Sir Patrick Stewart has probably one of the best Twitters. It's like, how can you not love that man? I don't know. And then, you know, of course you got William Shatner and the other original series actors and actresses that have come out and started posting things, you know. And some people, you know, some of them have interesting personalities, and some of them, they're like, is this thing on? You know, they don't. We all remember when Oprah tweeted about how awesome using the Surface was from her iPad. Whoops. So, but that's Twitter. I mean, I've been on Twitter since like 2006 when I first heard about it on a podcast. And it was like, oh, this is kind of cool too. Suddenly everybody is on it. Even news organizations are saying, follow us on Twitter, be our friend. And after a while, I'm starting to realize, but it's like the more I look at it, the more I realize, do I really need to be following people who aren't following me? I mean, I've got a number of, I guess you could call them quote-unquote friends I've interacted with in chat rooms and other, you know, on a regular basis, but it's like, they're not following me, and I don't, I mean, I've known friends that they tweet each other saying, how come we weren't following each other? We've been friends forever. I don't know, we're horrible friends, aren't we? Yeah, and it's like, it's very easy in your own head to make up conspiracies as to why things happen. And to explain things away of, like, everyone else is against me, man. It's everyone's, and it's like, I don't think I'm precious enough to do that. Like, I've never, I think of myself, it's like, no, you're, don't, why would people calculate and conspire against you? You know, I mean, that's my way, that's my thoughts with people that are the big doomsday folk who are like, oh, the world's gonna end and it's gonna happen on my watch. It's like, are you, you think you're so important that the world has gone on for billions of years, but now it's going to end on your watch because you're so precious? I mean, following people on Twitter, following people on Facebook, it's a lot of people that I know, and occasionally there's interactions. If you post something on somebody's profile, they respond to it sometimes, and if you post something that people really like as just like, and it's not subjective, it's just objectively a good thing, people tend to follow it. But it's like, man, Facebook has people who just share, I've seen people share things where it's like, wow, there is some horrible thought that people think is common. And nothing brings out this discussion more than the recent tragedies with Newtown. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to bog people down with that. But it's like, I try to keep my Twitter from being political because I don't want to be this or that or whatever. Because overly political commentators are often not entertaining or funny. I try to keep from having a very political swing one way or the other. And then my friends on Facebook share horrible, yeah. So Facebook, the problem with Facebook is it's a lot like YouTube comments. You realize how horrible people as a lump sum can be. YouTube comments are like the belly of the snake of the internet. If you think anything's going to get lower, no, just read a YouTube comment. Everybody's trying to become the next that guy with the glasses, the next angry video game nerd, and everybody would like to have a billion followers, but it's like, I don't know how I feel about the whole, I mean, I know you, sometimes you have to fake it till you make it, you have to act like a professional creator. I just want to come out and share things and try to actually have a discussion. And it's hard to, like I've been trying to say, we have the internet, we have social media, but how social are we? The part I hate the most out of any live event is whenever they start taking questions from the audience, because invariably the people that come up to ask questions are the worst people ever, that have the worst questions ever, that take everybody's time. I've got another question, mine's a two-parter, no. It's like, I mean there's a difference between people as, like, you know, people on a person, like it's like with kids. Your kid, I'm sure if I knew your kid and I was in part of, you know, making them grow up to be a good person and befriending them and going, hey, kid, how's it going? Oh, you like that game? That's awesome. You know, and actually getting to know them, that's great. When your kid runs up to me in a supermarket and starts telling me about his latest score on Angry Birds, you know, I guess it's the same with pets and whatnot, but it's like, I care about him if I actually know the person. Like when a commercial uses kids, you're just trying to get a sympathy effect. You're trying to bum me out. You're trying to get me to care about, you're trying to tug at the most basic things of people. People care about kids. They care about mortality. They care about supporting a good guy and fighting the bad guy. And I think it's a cheap shot. So what have I been up to? Well, I've been trying to work on an animated film. I'd like to do a short, and then another short, and try and make a series, try to make that into a bigger production. Of course, we'll see how it goes. I might learn some stuff making the first one go, I never want to revisit this ever again. So, but I'll keep updating about where I'm at on it. So far, I know the songs I want to use in the soundtrack, because they flow the story. I'm hoping to make it like pantomime. I'm not quite sure if I'll have sound effects or not, but the music's a big part, and I've trimmed the songs down to where I'd like them to be. You know, I'd like a full song, but it's like, songs are long, and when you realize a film needs to be, you know, I'd like to do like a 5, 6, 7 minute short or whatever, you can't have more than a couple, like 2 or 3 songs. It's like, well, I guess I gotta take like, I think it's like 6 or 7 I'm at now, and I trimmed them down, you know, just for scratch tracks, and then I put those in files that, so I know how long the scenes need to be, that I can move up to other things. And it's, I've got the story, I storyboarded it very roughly, and I haven't really redrawn it and tried to tighten it up. I'm still working on everything, but I'm getting there. I've got things down to scratch tracks, and I know, so I can know the beats of where I need to place things, and I think as I work on it, I'll get there. I've been playing a lot of Minecraft lately. It's a very versatile game. I've had it since I've had it somewhere in the alpha, it was pre-beta. And it's great because you can play different ways, and then if you don't like what you're doing, you can just go out, you know, you can build things, you can go out and fight monsters, you can explore, and if you don't like what you're doing, you can just change your gameplay out entirely. Or you can get mods, you know, Technic pack is also one, but it's, Technic is supposed to be like the single player version of Tekkit, but it also includes things like mo creatures and a lot of the mob things, and it, I think it's a little overdone as far as like all the mobs that spawn, and I would need to customize it, and I just never had the time to fiddle with it, because I've been trying multi-MC, like you can have multiple instances of Minecraft, and then you can install Minecraft Forge, which is a way to handle plugins till the API comes out for that, whenever the mod API actually comes out. But with multi-MC, you can backdate to previous versions of Minecraft. It's got MC Nostalgia, I think is the name for it. You can backdate to previous versions, so once you get a stable setup and you want to use plugins that are specifically for that version, and then, you know, if you want to lock yourself in and then slowly update as plugins update, because basically whenever a new version of Minecraft comes out, all the plugins that work for it go bye-bye, and you have to wait. Ray's minimap, it's just, it should be in the game. It just, I understand what the map that they put together, it took them a while to say, well, we should make maps in the game. All right, what do we want them to be like? Okay, you walk around and it fills out the area, and then you share it with a friend. It's like, that's a cute idea. Minecraft is much bigger than that. It's, no, guys, raise mini map with waypoints, different views, death points so you can find your stuff. When you can build a world that's technically, what, 8 times bigger than the Earth in the game, you know, it's time you actually have a real mapping system. Raised minimap should just be in the game. I'm sorry, that's just how I feel. Vanilla Minecraft itself is a nice little framework. They really need to get on supporting, like I said, multi-MC uses Forge, so that's why, I mean, for servers you can use Bucket, but it's like, just pick a standard and say, okay, this is going to be the API for now. Because the way they've been doing it, they've been trying to figure something out and roll it out. I don't know what they're doing, but the game's so much bigger than that. And it's like, well, why are you rolling out all these snapshots? Make things stable now. It's like, we don't need to keep adding. Oh, fireworks, that's great. Take some time, make the API. I don't know. I've been working on putting together my own mod pack for the way I play, because I like to have a base that I can build up and make a mighty strong fortress, and then go out and explore. And there's not really, I'm sure there's different plugins and whatnot, mods and maps and stuff set up for that, but I'm slowly putting my own together. I mean, I've got Raise Mini Map, obviously. Inventory tweaks is really nice, because when you, like, you use up a pickaxe, if you got another pickaxe in your inventory, that's, it just drops it in. And it's like, I realized that when I was playing Tekkit, I was like, do they just have a mod that just changes the inventory? And I found inventory tweaks, and it's like, this is a great mod, but then you go to the forum post and the creator is like, I'm on vacation, I don't have time to fix it, oh, somebody else patched it, awesome. And I'm thinking about just dropping this off to the ticket crew and letting them handle it. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Because the way Minecraft works is it's constantly being evolved and edited. And this is great for developers that can constantly build stuff, except every so often I get nostalgic for thinking back about old mods that were promising, and either the creators just got tired, or they couldn't, the way to, like, I remember when I first heard about Mod Loader, you know, it supported Mo creatures and all these things, that was great, but now it's like people are moving towards Forge, and all these old Minecraft mods, like, remember Builders, or Mine Colony, you know, those were nice mods that you could run in your single player game so you didn't get so freaking lonely. It's a great game. I like Tekkit. I think you can get lost in building stuff and maintaining inventories, but looks alright. Tekkit Lite, I've played it, I like it. I'd like to make some playthroughs and whatnot later and share things, and hopefully I'll be able to do some of those later. I've got other demos I'd like to be doing of different programs I've been using, so hopefully this is a good year for everybody. Hope we all have a good time, and I'm looking forward to sharing and podcasting and doing all kinds of new things in 2013, so I'll talk to you later. More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.